This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good Friday morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek.
And I am Lisa Wysocki from Hunt Valley, Maryland.
And you're listening to a special episode of Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for June the 15th, episode 1954. We are live at the American Horse Publications Annual Convention in Hunt Valley, Maryland. This episode is brought to you by Kentucky Performance Products. Good morning, Horse World.
I can't take it anymore.
Thank God it's Friday.
I would like, if I may, to take you on a strange journey.
We work all week so that we can eat and own a little piece of God's ground. Pushing papers and pens, red tape never ends. The stress can turn a smile into a frown. I need some horsing around.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us on this Friday morning. We are in Hunt Valley, Maryland, and I am here with two hosts from the Horse Radio Network. Lisa Wysocki's here.
Hi, everyone.
It's good to see you again. We got to have dinner last night and hang out. It was fun.
It was awesome.
I don't know that we've ever had dinner together in all
the
years.
We never have in all this time.
All those years.
Yeah. Amazing.
We never had. It was fun. Yeah. And then we also have Stephanie Ruff here from Arabian Finish Line Magazine and also Arabian Racing Radio.
Hello, Horse World.
Hi, Stephanie. And Jemmy says hi.
Yay. Hi, Jemmy.
She's probably listening.
I hope so.
Glad to hear that. She actually sent me a message like at 3 a.m. that said, you better get Stephanie on that show. So I said, she's going to be here. It's fine.
That's right.
We're good.
I'm here, Jemmy.
So we got a bunch of hosts here and a whole lot of people we know from the horse world. I think Diana DeRosa has been on our show many times, is going to stop by. She's the current president of the American Horse Publications, or AHP is what we'll be calling it the rest of the show. So we're at the Delta Hotels Baltimore Hunt Valley. It's located really in horse country, Maryland.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. You know, they have a nature conservancy thing going. So you cross the freeway and then it's just solid farms. I mean, huge, huge farms. And we had a big tour yesterday, and in some of the places we were at, they only allow one house for every 50 acres. Can you imagine?
Wow.
One house for every 50 acres.
Nice.
It's really cool.
And it's beautiful. It's rolling hills.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's just beautiful.
And
Maryland.
They've had a lot of rain here this spring, so everything's really green. It's really awesome.
Yeah, it is beautiful.
Yeah.
And this hotel is enormous.
Oh, everybody's getting lost.
Finding my room, I think I got lost about 5 times down multiple hallways. And everything about this hotel is horse. There are horses everywhere in this hotel.
Everywhere.
I love all the decorations and the photographs, and there are saddles hanging up as, you know, wall art. It's a perfect place for horse people.
Does your bathroom have a great big picture of a bit?
A bit.
Yes.
My bit is sideways, though. Is your bits? Are your bits?
Mine's up and down.
Yeah, mine's up and down. Yeah.
Is it a snaffle bit?
It is.
Yeah. Oh, we all have the same bit then. That's funny. They had a sale on there.
They did. And then I've got two huge pictures of horses, hunter horses in my bedroom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is cool. Everywhere you go here, there's horses in this hotel.
Yeah.
You know, it's been a long, long time since I've been to Hunt Valley, probably 30 years. It's been a long time. Yeah. Now, you live...
I used to live about an hour down the road, but I moved to Florida, so I had to fly up here instead.
Yeah, I know.
Instead of just
it's
driving
cooler
over.
Up here, though. Yeah. It's definitely
it is
cooler.
A little cooler up here, but it's also a little bit cooler in the wintertime, so I'm good.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, let's explain a little bit about what AHP is, what American Horse Publications is. And Lisa, you've probably been the longest member of the three of us here.
Maybe. Yeah. So, you know, American Horse Publications is a group that started decades ago to further the interests of all the horse magazines. And And they've since expanded to include books and podcasts and movies. So
they even let me in.
They did, you know? I mean, that says something about the organization.
Right, exactly. Took them about 8 years, and then they finally said, oh, we'll let them in.
Yeah. And so every year they have this amazing conference where you get to kind of learn all the new trends that are coming up. You get to meet all the editors and publishers of all the horse magazines, which is very exciting. And then they have this big awards ceremony on Saturday night, and Horse Radio Network is up for some awards. And then the latest Cat Enright book, The Main Equation, is up for best books. So,
and you are too, right, Stephanie?
Yes. I am for Arabian Horse Life, where I'm the managing editor of that. And
now, what's Arabian Horse
Arabian Life? Horse Life is the membership publication for the Arabian Horse Association. They are based out of Denver, Colorado.
They got a bunch of awards last year.
We usually do quite well. We did get some
pictures of pretty Arabians.
Exactly. I know they're beautiful horses. So yes, we are up for a number of different things as well. So yay, we're all winners. Woo!
I know.
And the show we're on right now, Horses in the Morning, is the reigning podcast.
Yes.
What did we get last
podcast
year?
Podcast champion.
Podcast world podcast. I don't know what it was.
Yeah.
But we won the podcast award last year for the best equestrian podcast.
Arabian Racing Radio is going to come at you next year. Yeah. We're coming at you. No.
Well, and we're reigning for another day. And then tomorrow night it'll be somebody else.
You don't know that.
No, Horses in the Morning is not. We're not a finalist. Dressage Radio Show is a finalist.
Oh, good. That's good.
So that's on the Horse Radio Network. Yeah. You're a winner by affiliation.
That's right. Yeah. And I hope they do. And it was interesting, the dressage episode that was nominated and accepted as a finalist was the All Hosts episode for Christmas last year, where we have all the hosts on together.
So fun.
So I don't know why they took a liking to that one, but they did.
They did. So yeah.
So that's kind of fun. So now at this conference, you learn a lot. This is really media, and it can be independent journalists. Mm-hmm. It can be the publishers of the magazines. And by the way, the room we're sitting in is the magazine room. And what that means is every magazine brings copies, like lots of copies of their magazines. And there must be 1,000 magazines around
here. I'm counting tables. Crazy. There's 12, 6-foot tables piled high with horse magazines.
I'm telling you, listeners, you would love being here. You would be going through going, this, that. You would have enough reading for a year.
Yes.
Print is not dead.
I know. That's the thing you realize is that there are still a lot of magazines in the world.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You could not read all of these.
No, and multiple issues of many of the magazines. You know, they're bringing 3 or 4 different months' issues. So, you know, if you love horse magazines, this is the place to be.
And this is also an industry show, meaning that, for you, Stephanie, you're here as a publisher of a magazine.
Right.
And the people who print magazines are here. You know, there's the different people you have to deal with in creating the magazine are here.
Yes. It really does encompass all parts of publishing now. Printers, photographers, writers, publishers, podcasters, and digital and print. Credit to AHP for expanding and modifying as the industry modifies. But yeah, we're all here, and it is a fantastic networking opportunity for all of us in all of our different facets to meet people and talk to people. And
we're going to meet a lot of those people today. Yeah. We probably have about 8 guests lined up today that are going to show up, including every year they do an Equine Visionary Award for people who really have been instrumental in making the horse world a better place. And we don't know who that is yet because they haven't, they're announcing it right now. They're going to drag him or her over after they win, and we're going to get them on the air. So we'll find out who that is. We have some authors, we have some bloggers, we have some students here that are up for the Students Awards. We have a
photographer.
A photographer. We have a German translator.
Yeah.
So we're going to get her to say bad things about Jamie in German.
Yeah. That's what happens when Jamie doesn't show up.
Yes, right. That's right. So Jennifer, if you have any suggestions of sayings you want her to say about Jamie, just type them in there. And Jennifer is at home. She is making all of this happen. So we appreciate that as well. One other thing we wanted to mention is that listeners and auditors have organized a meetup tonight. Do you have the address?
I sure
do. It's at the Ruby Tuesday in Columbia, Maryland at 7 p.m. Ruby Tuesday in Columbia, Maryland, 7 p.m.
And the address is 9071 Snowden River Parkway, Columbia, Maryland, 21046.
If you're interested in stopping by and you're a listener, we would love to see you there.
7 p.m.
Yep. So, Jennifer's one suggestion for the German was geld that in German.
Yes.
If she could say the word, we wouldn't know.
Yeah.
So now another thing that happened last night was we had a keynote speaker who I found fascinating, and I forget his name off the top, but he worked with National Geographic for 40 years.
Yes.
As a writer and he just went around the world doing all these adventures. And And it was fascinating to hear how National Geographic has gone. What was his name? His name is
David
Maxwell Braun.
Yeah.
And he was a fascinating guy. He talked about how National Geographic went from obviously the most award-winning magazine ever to digital.
Yeah.
And the transition there and how they've done that so successfully. But was there something that surprised you about who started National Geographic?
Yes, Albert Einstein.
It was Alexander Graham Bell's brother.
It was his son-in-law.
That's right.
We were listening.
Yeah.
Alexander Graham Bell's son-in-law.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he asked his father-in-law, Alexander Graham Bell, for money to send scientists into the bush in Africa to record some things. And Bell said, forget the scientists, just take a photographer, just take a camera out there. This was like, what, in 1888 or something?
Yeah, a long time ago.
Yeah, and just take a photographer out there and get me the prints and write up something about what you're observing. And that's how it started.
Yeah, that's how it started all those years ago. And it was interesting that he told some stories about, the animal adventures and things they had been on and some of the most successful articles they'd written. And I took some things away, actually, for the Finding Florida show from him, because a lot of his message last night as keynote speaker was storytelling.
Yes.
And was, really talking about the storytelling part of that whole adventure.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say you were going to go out into the Florida bush and find some zebras.
Or that. We could do that too. Now, you did. Let's talk a little bit while we're waiting for our first guest to show up here about Hunt Valley.
Yeah.
So its name was really based on Maryland's horse hunt country, which is right here.
Right here.
And it all revolves around the Maryland Hunt Cup, which started in 1894.
That's not amazing.
I know. And the Maryland Hunt Cup is 4 miles long with 22 timber fences. So they're not brush. They're timber.
No. And we got to walk that course.
Oh, did you yesterday?
Yeah.
So what was that?
Yeah.
Like?
Exhausting.
Imagine riding
course,
it.
4 miles.
Yeah. And the fences range in height, I think, from 3'6" to 4'10".
Wow.
And a lot of the fence posts are made out of locust, which just hardens to rock.
Right. Yeah,
so,
it does.
So when the horses, hit the fence, they very rarely crack. And, it's that you go around the course twice, and it's like the biggest thing ever in this area. You've probably been.
Yeah. Stephanie. Tailgating is huge, and
food and alcohol for horse people?
Never. We don't do anything like that.
Yeah.
It's a huge deal, and it's a huge social event, and it's a great deal of fun.
Yeah. What I found really most interesting, though, was we also got to go to the actual hunt club itself, and they're housed in this house that was built in 1780. Can you imagine? 1780 by some English guy, and huge old brick house. And it is still being used as the headquarters for the hunt club. I mean, normally you go to a house that's built in 1780 and it's like a museum, and you're like, you can't touch the walls.
Right.
You can't go into the, you're sitting on the sofa, and it's amazing.
And you got to play with the hounds.
Oh, we got to play with the hounds. That was so cool. 80 hounds. We had about 50 journalists and authors and freelancers. And 80 hounds just milling around. It was just the most amazing experience. And Glenn and Stephanie, I have to tell you, I wanted to take one of the puppies home.
Oh, they had puppies.
They had puppies. Oh, they were so cute.
They're so lumbering. The hound puppies are just like lumbering little balls of fur.
And you know, such well cared for hounds and so happy.
Yeah.
You know, just so happy. It was just awesome. Yeah.
Well, that's very cool. You know, this Hunt Cup actually started as a contest between two hunts, the Elk Ridge Fox Hunting Club and the Green Spring Fox Hunting Club. And it was really, you know, they used to bust on each other a lot, I guess, over some ale. And so they said, well, we got to have this race. And that's how it started. A year later, the race was opened up to horses owned and ridden by members of any recognized hunt club in Maryland. And then in 1903, it was opened up to any hunt club in North America. And now there's no restrictions, apparently. You don't have to. And it's restricted to amateur jockeys, I guess.
I think so. Yeah. And you know, but the Maryland Hunt Cup and the hunt, it's like the most prestigious race in steeplechase race in the country. We have the Iroquois steeplechase here in Nashville. Not here in Nashville, but in Nashville. I don't even know where I am. Shows how much sleep I've been getting. But that's a really big race. But this is like the race. If you're going to go see a steeplechase, you want to go see the Maryland Hunt Cup.
It is.
In the late 70s, women were allowed to ride for the first time. And the first female jockey to win the race was Joyce Slater. And she won in 1981. And to prove it was no fluke, Slater repeated in 1982.
Oh, good for her.
Since then, other female riders to win the race included Blythe Miller and Anne Moran. So there's a whole history here, and it is just beautiful. There's some iconic thoroughbred farms here as well.
Yes, we went to Saginaw, which is the home of Native Dancer, and that was really an amazing, amazing opportunity to see their track and their facility. And you know, the Saginaw was built by the Vanderbilt people. Albert Vanderbilt died on the Lusitania, I think, like in 1912. But his family and his company built an indoor track in 1925, a 660-yard indoor track. can you imagine? I mean, in 1925,
it's indoor.
Indoor.
Yeah. Wow.
And it's still there. They don't use it, but it's still there. And they have just so many amazing horses. They're still running at Pimlico. They're still running at Belmont. And it was just such a beautiful facility.
Is that Carly I see over there?
I see Carly.
Come over here once. Have a seat. Our first guest is a little late, so you're going to be our first guest.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Excited. Yeah.
All right, you're going to recognize this person. She's been on our show before. Carly Cade is here. She's right up against the mic. You have to be about an inch away.
Real close.
How's that? Good morning, Glenn and Lisa.
I heard you two got to hang out together.
We did.
Yeah.
We finally got to meet in person.
That was so much fun.
It was fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like your shirt. On our shirt, it says, writing horse books makes my spurs jingle.
Yeah,
that means it makes me happy. That's my little punchline. Yeah. I'm a cowgirl.
So what have you been doing since you got here to
HB?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. The American Horse Publications Conference is so much fun. This is my second year being here. Yesterday, there was I went on the excursion and we took a tour of Hunt Valley, Maryland.
We were just talking about that.
It was amazing. And we actually walked the Maryland Hunt Club course. That is their big steeplechase that they do every year. And I saw these fences for myself. These horses are amazing athletes. I cannot believe how tall these fences are. They're taller than I am. They're like 6-foot fences that they're jumping and they're like walls. It's incredible. It was a really like great experience to see that.
Yeah.
So what's up in the world of Carly Cade?
Well,
of course, Carly is known for the In the Rain series, and In the Rains was your first book, and then Cowboy Away, right? Yeah. Which we've talked about here on the show.
That's right.
Yeah.
So the books are going great. I'm still in the Amazon bestselling rank, which makes me very happy.
Yay.
And I'm almost finished with the third book. So that should hopefully be out by the end of the year.
And I've heard rumors that this is a JD book.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, actually, so the In the Rain series will finally complete with the third book. I've been kind of stringing my readers along and leaving them with little fun cliffhangers to keep the excitement going. So the third book will complete the story. Everyone will know what will happen for handsome cowboy McKinnon Kelly and wannabe cowgirl Devin Brooke. But I'm finding out that there's JD fans out there too. JD is a I give you the choice of two cowboys in the book. One, you know, one's a bull rider, the other is a horse trainer. So there's JD fans. So I've already started working on a fourth companion piece to the In the Rain series featuring JD as
it's the like
lead.
The movie Solo. Yeah. It's kind of a spinoff.
Right on. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That is great. Mm-hmm. That is great.
Now, Carly, I've told you this before and you never listen. So now Lisa has written Horses in the Morning into her books. And we have not seen Horses in the Morning in your book yet.
I you know, it's like, it's going to happen. Believe me, it's going to happen. This is going to be a long career of writing. Maybe Lisa and I can collaborate.
Can you please make Jamie the murderer? We've been trying to get her to murder somebody all these years, and it's never happened.
Yeah. All right, we're going to collaborate, Glenn. We'll talk about our we'll plot the storyline, and yeah. We'll make it happen.
Yeah.
So where can people buy them? Where can they find them?
So you can visit my website, www.carlycadecreative.com. And there's a link to, you can buy them directly from me or Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Nook, iBooks, and Google Books. So it's pretty much everywhere you would shop for a book. Yeah.
So we always ask authors, what's the toughest part for you? Everybody's answer is different with an author, too, of the writing process. What's the hardest part?
I think the hardest part is dealing with your mind talking to yourself like, you know, this, you know, I'm not good enough to do this. Why am I doing this? I don't have anything to say. So I found that
alcohol helps.
Yeah. Well, they always say, I think, who was it? Who said, write drunk, edit sober?
Yeah.
That was like a famous quote from Emerson or someone like that.
J.D. Salinger or somebody.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. But yes, no, that helped. Well, I write in the morning, so drinking in the morning, I wouldn't recommend. Oh. But really what I found is just sitting down and doing the work. One of the best books I ever read and my favorite quote is from Stephen King. He wrote the book on writing, which I highly recommend.
It's an amazing book, yeah.
It's awesome. The hardest part is, or the hardest moment is just before you start. So I find once I finally sit down, schedule that
time. Isn't that true of anything we do, though?
Absolutely. Yeah. Just
once you get going, you're fine.
Yeah. It's, right? You know, to start anything or a dream, you just have to sit down, do the work, and believe it, and just follow follow that passion. Yeah.
Yes.
And that is so true of everything we do.
So true. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So true. Well,
everybody starts a podcast. I tell them, you just got to record the first one, and it's going to suck, and then you're going to do it again.
Yeah.
You know?
And you grow. Yeah, it's like writing. You know?
Right, Stephanie? Our first one's always suck.
Absolutely. You no, my first one did not suck. I'm sure it didn't.
Yeah. You should have seen our first one. They really suck. Go back to first episode of Stable Scoop. It was like,
you
my
do
God.
Have to just do it. Yeah. Nike's tagline.
Well,
you
and
do
how
have
hard
to
is
just
it for the editor of a magazine? I mean, you got to coordinate and put everything together. That's got to suck sometimes.
Yes. Yeah. And no matter how hard the thing is no matter how hard you try to work ahead and plan ahead, it all still slams at the same time. And that's
because your writers are doing it the same way all at the last minute.
You know, and so you try really, really hard to time manage everything, but it all, you still end up doing 15-hour days the week before it has to go to print, and that's just how it happens. But you just get it done. You sit down and you get it done.
All right, Carly, give the website again.
www.carlycadecreative.com.
All right, Carly.
Thanks for stopping
by. We'll see you all weekend.
Happy
AHP
conference.
Yes,
right.
You too.
Thanks,
we'll
Carly.
We'll see you soon.
Bye. Now we have a friend of yours from yesterday.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm so excited that Shelley Paulson is here. So Shelley is a friend of mine from Minnesota.
Oh,
and,
wow.
But Shelley is one
a
of
Minnesota
the
Minnesota girl.
Minnesota.
Yeah. And you have to be about an inch away.
Yeah.
I can be an inch away.
Yeah. So Shelley is one of the premier equine photographers in the entire country.
Oh,
and
wow.
And she has amazing photos. And she's got a new book out called Horses, Portraits, and Stories. So tell us about the book first.
Well, it was a complete surprise to me.
It just showed up on your doorstep.
It just
showed
up. I don't know who wrote this.
Wow, that was easy.
On my birthday a year ago, an email dropped into my inbox, and it was from Amherst Media, which is a publisher I know well because they publish photography books, like how-to books, forever. And they wanted to publish a book of my work. And
That never happens.
Never happens. So I was like, is somebody spoofing me. You're like, is this, where's the camera? I mean, it was the best birthday present ever. And then it took a full year. The book came out like on the 18th of April. My original email was on the 20th. So 2 days short of a year, it came out.
Wow. And so, you know, the listeners, you know, everybody has probably seen Shelley's work because you shoot for like what, Horse Illustrated and Farnham and Neutrina and Smart Pack. And I mean, all these major companies, you do a lot of their photography.
I do. And some of those they're pulling from my stock photography library. So custom shoots for Farnham and Neutrina, and then lots of brands have used my images out of my stock.
Oh my God,
library.
I'm in the book and I'm in the full section.
Oh, good. And he's going, ooh, and ah.
They're so cute. And then I was in the humor section. That's the first thing I opened to.
Oh, yeah. That's perfect for you.
Yeah.
it is.
What photography book has a humor section? That's great.
Yeah, mine.
So tell us, I mean, your photos.
Here's a picture of a stirrup, and it looks like a masterpiece.
Doesn't it?
And by the way, could you sell some of these to the people at the
hotel? I was going to say, you should.
We got that horrible bit picture in your back.
I know, that's in my room too.
I know, and it's not
even
a very good picture.
Is that a Calvary bit? Like, what is that?
I know.
Oh, I know.
So maybe you could. This one would be beautiful. On the saddle.
It's a little Western for Hunt Valley, but
yeah, it probably is.
I have very similar English, you know, photos.
I'm sorry, didn't mean to interrupt.
No, you're fine.
Yeah, no, Glenn's excited. So
yeah, well, I like that.
We all are. But I mean, tell us, you know, because I take photos of our horses at Colby's Army all the time, and they never look as good as yours. So what's like your top like two or three tips for taking photos?
Well, light is king. Light is everything. So instead of looking for a great location first, I look for a great light first. And if a location doesn't have good light, it's not a good location.
Okay.
And so putting that light at the top of my list is the thing that I think really sets my work apart.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Good.
And it's going to set anyone's work apart. And I remember exactly when I shifted from being a light first or from a location first to a light first photographer, and it transformed my work.
Wow. Yes. Good to know.
Yes. The other thing is to make sure you're using a long enough lens.
Okay.
And that excludes your iPhone.
I was going to say my little phone probably
isn't
going to cut it.
You know, they're getting better. You have like my iPhone has like a 2x thing now, and that looks a little bit better, but wide angle is going to make the horse's head look big and their body look small, and so the longer lens is going to compress their body into a proper proportion.
Oh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
You talk about light, and that is, when we have had photographers on before, that is the thing they always talk about first. Mm-hmm. And when I'm looking at your photos, you use light amazingly.
Isn't that amazing?
Thank you. I'm like literally obsessed with light. Like, it's bad for me to drive the countryside at like right at sunset, because I'm just like, oh, and I want to pull over and take pictures of random horses.
Isn't that amazing?
I like fog and dust too.
A lot of your photos are all about the light. Yeah. It's about where the light hits, and you may have. I'm sure you do 50 to get, or 1,000 to get the one.
I have a 10-to-1 keeper ratio from my shooting.
So is it really?
Average 10 shots.
That's higher than I thought it would be, actually.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm amazing. No, I'm just kidding. No. It probably wasn't always that way, but I was a wedding photographer for over 10 years. And
are you glad not to be doing that anymore?
Oh, dear Lord, I'm so glad not to be doing that. But it was a kind of boot camp that most photographers don't get, where you are presented with an entire day of photography, and you have to find good light, and you have to sometimes make good light, whether it's, you know, a good day for it or not. And so I took, you know, they say 10,000 hours to master something. Well, you get that in wedding photography pretty fast.
I'll bet.
Yeah.
All right. I have to ask, what was the worst bride ever?
Oh, what if she hears this?
Well, don't use her name. Or the craziest thing that
the
happened.
The craziest wedding ever was, I had a wedding where twin sisters married twin brothers.
Really?
No way.
And
that's
their
weird.
Children
were they
are biological
were they identical?
Cousins. Or no.
They're biological siblings.
Siblings, yeah.
Were they identicals?
Identical.
That's weird.
Did you know who you were did they all wear the same stuff?
Uh-uh.
Oh, good.
No.
Well, that helped.
But they got married in separate, like one ceremony after the other, but we did a lot of pictures together. But it was a little bit of a chaotic wedding.
I can imagine.
Not your normal.
Wow.
You know? But you're right. They would be brothers.
Yeah. So, that's it. They're biological siblings and not cousins.
So which is harder to work with, the brides or the horses?
They're different kind of hard. because you can pose brides and horses are, you know, 1,000-pound flight animals. So, yeah, I enjoy the horses more, I gotta admit. And it was a huge leap of faith for me to leave weddings because I was making a lot of money at it. But I really putting my full focus on horses has grown that side of my business, like in a way I couldn't have ever dreamed. But, you know, just giving myself to one thing and being really exceptional at one thing was transformative in my business.
Is there one or two of your shoots that really stand out for you as highlights?
What's your favorite child?
I know. Right? Yeah. Because I noticed you've done a lot of wild horses too.
I've done some wild horses. Yeah. There's a feature coming out in Horse Illustrated soon of a experience I had photographing the Salt River wild horses.
Yeah. I'm looking at the pictures
Arizona,
right now.
In Arizona. And, we happened upon a herd.
They're in Arizona.
Yeah. Resting in among these trees, and there was beautiful light coming in and dust in the background. And it was just one of those experiences that I'll never forget, that standing there. And they would let us get close. We were respectful, but they weren't skittish or shy, and the light was perfect. And they were just laying around and snoring. And it just kind of felt like we were invisible in that moment.
Wow.
The other thing I noticed that you do, and it's one of the other suggestions, we've had Scott Trees on the
bunch.
He used to do tips for us years ago. And of course, he is also another one of the iconic photographers in the horse world, especially in the Arabian side.
I was going to say he's been huge in the Arabians.
Yeah, he's the one that photographed the palace for Sheikh Mohammed.
Wow.
The entire palace, every room, every wall.
Oh my!
Wow.
God.
Yeah, that would have been.
That's
be
kind of a
job.
Cool
yeah.
game. Huh?
Yeah.
He's probably one of the only ones to see all the rooms.
Right.
But one of the things he said, and you do it so well, and it's something we don't think about. Everybody that takes pictures with their phone wants to center everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it's he preached this off center your subject. Do not put them in the center of the picture. And almost every one of your pictures is that way.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's the rule of thirds. You break your frame.
Why? But why? Why does that make it more interesting?
It's where the eye gets naturally drawn. It creates some tension in the picture. You can use leading lines. You can use negative space, all sorts of things to make that, just to make the composition more interesting. Like for me, when I'm making a composition, I'm doing it in such a way that I want people to spend time looking at the photo. I don't want them to just look at it and move on. I want them to really look at it. And here's another huge tip. And I see this like all the time done wrong. You look for something called a merger. And that is a big line like coming out of the top of someone's head or across.
Right.
And it's like a telephone pole or a tree or a branch or whatever. Yeah. And it's one of those things that people don't even
think
about.
It makes you look like you're an alien or something.
Exactly. Right, or like a unicorn.
Yeah.
And who doesn't want to look like a unicorn? But it'll make or break the comfort level of the viewer.
Right.
And when you just feel it, even if you don't have a consciousness about it, when something's like growing out of someone's head. And so I look, you know, I do a lot of kind of, it's very intuitive now, but it's thinking head in a clear spot. And whether it's a horse's head or a person's head, my little mantra in my head is head in a clear spot. And that's an easy way to remember that.
Yeah.
Scott also talked about how he hates staged photos. He hates posed photos.
Oh, yeah.
And there's not a lot of those in your book.
Not in my book, but I do a fair amount of portraits where, you know, it's things are set up. But like I told a student who came to me for mentoring a couple weeks ago, she was surprised how much posing I do. And posing actually puts a person at ease. So I like to kind of pose them, but then I like to kind of pull back and let magic happen between them and their horse. And I consider the pose more like a framework. And then the horse can come in and, like, you know, have a moment with them. I tell them, if you're posed and your horse comes in for a moment, you break the pose, you respond to that. And so I let
that. And that's the shot, right?
That's the shot.
Yeah, it is.
So people buy the, like, looking at the camera. You know, I mean, you got a kid, you want a picture of them smiling, looking at the camera. And I respect that. But the ones that really move me are those genuine moments where they bond with their horse in front of the camera. And it's a fine dance between directing and just letting it happen.
Yeah. And I mean, I've seen a lot of your posed photos. And I know, you know, if you have a show horse and you want that staged shot, you know, with, you know, your rider and your horse for an ad or something, but they to me, they don't even really look stage. They just look like, oh, here I am with my horse, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the magic in a lot of your photos.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I just try not to give like, put your hand like this, and I give really very light direction, but enough that people are like, okay, she knows what she's doing.
Yeah. Well, Stephanie, you're doing Arabian Finish Line magazine. How important, you know, we're in a magazine conference here, basically.
Yeah, right.
How important are the photos to your magazine?
Photos are everything, especially for print. You know, that's still one of the main draws of a print publication are beautiful photos. And like she said, they can make or break a story. They, you know, they back up the words and they bring a lot of the emotion to it. And especially in a day, that's what catches their eye and makes them stop and makes them maybe want to read the article, because we, in our age today, we read, if it's more than a paragraph, you know, people are like, oh, I don't want to read this whole thing. So, but photos are what, you know, initially grabs your eye and makes you go there and say, oh, I want to know more about this. So, you know, good photography is hugely important to go along and, with the written words.
Yeah. And I thought it was really interesting because Shelley mentioned about the framing and the negative space and everything. And I think that's really important in page design too. In page
it
layout.
Is. Yeah. It is. And I am no expert in that, trust me. But it really is in the white space, and which is kind of the negative space. And and all of that is really, really important.
And the more I'm licensing images for magazines, like the other day I was doing a shot of a girl and I was kind of filling the frame with her, and I was like, ooh, this could be editorial. So I shoot her way off to the side, and I'm like, right. I can just see the text right here, you know? And so it definitely is the more editorial work I do, the more influenced I am by seeing my images in like a full spread in my mind as I'm taking them and thinking about negative space, like, ooh, words could go here. And I'm sure my editors are going to love that.
Yeah.
As an average person, I'm thinking, what's going to make a good Facebook header? How do I put the subject to the right?
Yes.
On a Facebook header, you want it more to the right. So I'm thinking Facebook header now.
Well, that's all part of it. That's a completely different part, but another important part, because visuals and social media, that's where it's at now. Everybody says you've got to have a visual to go with all your social media posts. So it's important there too. So it's important everywhere.
Yeah. We're endlessly consuming imagery now in a way that we didn't before social media. It's like, you know, you have a company, you've got to have something to put out almost every day to stay in front of people's eyes. And I just think that gets tough, and you want it to like be on brand, and you want it to be high quality, and you know, like the list just goes on.
Yeah.
It's really
hard. Where can people find the book?
Okay. The book is available on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com.
Horses, Portraits, and Stories by Shelley Paulson, P-A-U-L-S-O-N. And we'll put a link to it in our show notes as well. But it's a beautiful book.
Thank you.
And it's soft cover. It's not a hardcover.
Nope. It'd be great for a waiting room.
Do you know how much it is on Amazon?
It is 18 some,
which for a picture book is really cheap.
Really good. The suggested retail is $24.95, but it's been $18.68 or something.
And put out by Amherst Media.
And it's also, I'm going to make it available for sale on my website as well.
Yay! Awesome. Yeah. Good job.
Thank
well
you for
done.
Stopping by.
Oh,
well
thank done. You so much.
It's and here, I'm giving her my card so that maybe we can work together as far as photos and editorial.
I would love that. And can I give my website too?
Well, yes.
Oh, yeah.
It's shelleypaulson.com. shelleypaulson.com.
Sounds good.
All right.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Our next guest is going to be with us in just a second. And I think we know who now won the Equine Visionary Award, judging by who just walked in the room.
Yes.
Jennifer, why don't we take a commercial for Kentucky Performance Products, and then we're going to be back with the winner of the Equine Visionary Award. This Nutrition Minute is brought to you by Kentucky Performance Products, the company that simplifies your search for research-proven nutritional supplements at kppusa.com.
The horse that matters to you matters to Kentucky Performance Products. Feeding your horse starch-laden grains can lead to colic, laminitis, and metabolic disease. Today, nutritionists are recommending the use of high-quality fat to provide healthy calories. Fat is an extraordinary energy source. It's readily utilized by the horse and contains more than 2 times the calories of starchy grains. Replacing grain with a high-quality fat supplement reduces a horse's risk of developing health problems. Equijoule Stabilized Rice Bran is an excellent fat supplement. It contains a balanced calcium to phosphorus ratio and won't cause mineral imbalances when added to the diet. Its all-natural ingredients are high in healthy fat and fiber. And best of all, horses fueled by Equijoule stay calmer and more focused on the job at hand. When you need to add healthy calories to your horse's diet, choose Equijoule. To learn more, visit Kentucky Performance Products at kppusa.com.
This Nutritional Minute has been brought to you by Kentucky Performance Products. You can find all of their terrific products at kppusa.com. Well, we're back live from the AHP conference in Hunt Valley, Maryland. And of course, that means we're talking with a whole bunch of people involved in the media in the horse world. And every year, the AHP conference does an Equine Visionary Award. And there were four people up for the award. You're going to recognize one of them. All our listeners will know Monty Roberts, who does the Horsemanship Radio Show. His daughter, Debbie, does that. And he's a constant guest over there. Also, Roxanne Durant, co-founder and executive director of the Interscholastic Equestrian Association, IEA. We've had them on the show before. And Jay Winborn, the current executive director of the National Reined Cow Horse Association. But none of those won because Dr. David Jones won, and that's who's sitting here right now, who's chairman for Brook USA and former chairman of Brook International. Hi, Dr. Jones.
Hi there. So pleased to be here.
It's good to have you. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Did you ever think you'd be winning a Visionary Award? When you became a vet all those years ago?
You know, and I daren't have admitted this in the room. I have barely sat on a horse in my life. and the first time as a vet in vet college, you know, they do this sort of exercise. You have to take some, you know, horse training. And one of the exercises you probably know is to do this 180, 360 degree turn in the saddle.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I kicked the horse in the wrong place and it took off with me facing backwards.
That was the end of your riding career?
So that was the end of my riding career, other than a few sort of on holiday rides. But other than that, I've been, yes, indirectly connected with horses, donkeys, and mules for a long time.
Well, you're doing the good work, and we've had the Brook on many times. Cindy Roman's here, who we've had on the show many times before as well, and we've talked a lot about what the Brook does. We actually did a history of the Brook and founder and the whole thing a little while back. So how did you get involved and why did you get involved? Like, well, how many, 1,000 years ago, they said?
It was about 47 years ago.
Yeah.
Wow. It's a funny, very funny story because I actually have spent most of my working life on zoo animal welfare. I started out as a zoo veterinarian in the 70s at London Zoo, worked for 15 years, and then made the fatal mistake of moving from animal management to human management. And I tell you, managing animals is a lot easier than managing humans.
We all know that.
But going back to 1971, Dorothy Brook had a really vibrant personal assistant, PA, called Kathleen Taylor Smith. And she ran the Brook for many years after Dorothy died in the mid-50s. And Kathleen, who I didn't know, rang me one day. I'd only been a year or so at Whipsnade. But Whipsnade is the country zoo, and it's big animals. Big animals. So it was in the early years of darting, dart guns and anesthetic guns. And this voice on the phone one January morning says, "Would I go to Cairo and cut the giraffe's toenails?" And because the Brook star.
That's not a call you expected to get as an early vet.
Not at 8 o'clock on a Monday morning. So cut a long toenail story short. My wife and I, we'd only just been married. We actually went to Cairo for a month and trained both the Cairo zoo vets and cut a lot more toenails, I can tell you. And their stories in their own right. And trained at that time Rook only had the hospital in Cairo, which had been a result.
That was the first place.
Yeah, right. The funding left over from originally purchasing the 5,000 horses, the World War One horses, was used to build this hospital. And at the time I joined it, there was the hospital and one small clinic in Alexandria. And I think there was one staff in London and 40 roughly in Egypt. Today there are 1,000 staff.
Wow.
And the budget's gone from 80 $1,000 to $28 million.
My goodness.
11 countries and over 1,000, mostly folks who are actually native to those countries. So, yes, it was the giraffe's toenails that started. and following that, the board, they called it the committee at the time, but the board in London was really family members, families and their friends. And I think I was probably the first outsider, as it were, at the tender age, I think 26 or something, to join the board. And I've been involved with it ever since.
And I'm sure you've traveled to all of these places.
Oh, boy, yes. Yeah. Well, not quite all, because since moving to the US 24 years ago, I chaired the London board for nearly 20 years on three different occasions. And then when I came to the US, obviously, as it was growing, I couldn't stay as chairman in London. And we started working on Brook USA. But really, when Cindy came on board seven years ago, was really when Brook USA really got going. So I haven't been to some of the West African countries, and I haven't actually been to Nicaragua and Guatemala. But all the others, I was in the chair when we founded Brook India and Brook Pakistan and Jordan.
So looking back at 47 years from when you started, are we better off now as a world with our treatment of equids?
We are. We definitely are. But really, even with everything that Brook does, we're only the tip of the iceberg. I mean, a little known fact that it's the latest UN figures, 112 million working equines, horses, mules, and donkeys,
wow,
supporting something like 750,000 of the world's poorest people. It's a staggering figure. And those people are totally dependent on those animals. There's nothing else that will give them an income. And what Brook does is not only provide the straight clinical care and then teach them at least
you
the
cut
basics.
Their toenails. Right, that's one of them. Yeah.
Not the same, but making the harnessing and the shoes and feeding them better and a whole range of things that make the community of horse care within these very poor village communities make it just a great deal better.
Well, it sounds like the right person won the Visionary Award.
Absolutely. Congratulations.
Well,
not just for today, but on your whole career. Yeah. I mean, just
and doing good
amazing
work for animals everywhere.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
And I'd like to just add that David has done all of that as a volunteer for the past 47 years. He has not received a penny of remuneration from Brook. So it's been a 47-year volunteer commitment.
You wait till you see that bill when you get it.
Yeah.
I worked out once. And I think
maybe we just thought he was.
Yeah, you just opened up a can of worms, boy.
Somewhere between 3 and 4 years, actual years of working for Brook. Yeah,
wow.
Like
wow. Wow.
So did you stay as a veterinarian then?
Well, I was 15 years as a zoo vet, both at Whipsnade and London.
Oh, we could talk to you all day about stories there, I bet, too.
There's a few stories there, too, yeah.
Yeah.
But then, but then gradually, in the process, sort of became more people managing oriented. Many more headaches.
Yeah. For sure.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Jones.
Thanks for stopping by.
Thank you, Cindy.
Thanks.
Appreciate
it. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Appreciate it. All right, we're going to get our next guest over here. Hope is with us. You know, one of the things that is still very popular in the world today, and we don't talk about as much as we should, is blogs. And I'll tell you what, 10 years ago, Hope doesn't know this, the first Stable Scoop episode that we did, our flagship show 10 years ago, now we're 7,000 episodes later. We're just hitting 7,000 episodes now, but our first episode had a blogger on. That was the first episode, first guest was a blogger. Come in about an inch from there. You want to introduce her?
Yeah. So this is Hope Ellis Ashburn, and she is this amazing equine blogger, actually from my home state of Tennessee. And so welcome.
Thank you so much for
having
me on. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about your blog.
Well, my blog is called Red Horse on a Red Heel, and I blog about everything from life with my half Arabian mare and to horse health to life on our Angus cow-calf hay operation that we have.
And, how big a place?
It's exciting. We have a couple of different farms that are split between the family. One is about 80 acres and the other is about 40. And so we raise our own hay and then our cattle and my horse, which I do all kinds of fun things.
Do you find it difficult to open yourself to your readers? Because sometimes, in reading your blog, things don't always go right, and you're very open about the ups and downs of your life.
Absolutely.
That's what 100 acres will do for you.
Absolutely. It is. And, being open to criticism as well as compliments is always difficult.
Because the neighbors always know how to take care of it better.
They do.
They know a better way to feed.
Absolutely. Yeah. And what are you thinking? But it's great. I enjoy it a lot. It's gotten easier over the years.
That's really good, because I know just sometimes when I put something out there, boy, you know, you think, oh, this is really cool. And then everybody comes back and you have to be open to the criticism. So what kind of blog gives you the most feedback?
Usually it's connecting with readers over just real life experience with horses. I have gotten some feedback on feeding horses and pasturing horses and different things like that. But usually it's the real life experience with horses that people connect with the most.
Yeah. If I were to start a blog, which I'm actually kind of thinking about, what kind of advice would you give me?
It's interesting you should say that, because I was having dinner last night with a group of ladies and we were talking about that. And one of the things I'm interested in taking and advice I would like to give others, because I thought it was so super, was just blogging about, have a goal in mind about what direction you're deciding to take, and then target your blog toward that. There was a book that she recommended about eventually compiling blog posts into a book format. So I'm kind of interested in doing that, and I think that would make a great blogging experience.
There's a few bloggers have done very well doing that.
Yeah. And I think, as somebody who reads blogs, you find somebody and you follow them and you think that you know them. Do you ever get like recognized at the grocery store? Or do you ever find readers?
It's more outside of in competitions that I go to, horse competitions that I go to, or events like this that I'll run into somebody. Oh, you're Red Horse on a Red Hill. They don't necessarily know your name, but they know that, what your blog is.
So you're doing your brand pretty well.
Yeah. So that's fun.
That's really good. I think it's all about the brand these days. If they know your tagline, or they know your product, they don't have to know you.
Absolutely. And that's, the tagline is, and that's a lot of the people that I seem to connect with and draw to, is do-it-yourselfers.
Okay, so I have to ask, because it's my job, is there a horse husband?
Yes, there
is a horse husband. And did he marry into this? Did he know what he was getting into?
He knew very well. Funny story. We grew up in little towns about 45 minutes apart, but we met at 16 years old in Washington, D.C. And so we dated off and on for 10 years, and he knew exactly.
That's a long way from the farm, Washington, D.C.
It is, but he knew he was farm raised. He knew exactly what he was getting into. So we've been together 21 years now.
Yeah, there's a few days he's sworn about that fence coming down.
Yeah. Yes. The criteria is he had to be able to back a horse trailer. That was, if you can't back the horse trailer.
Works for me. See, that's my problem. I've got the wrong criteria. I'm still single.
Well, if I could jump in here for a minute, Hope has actually started writing for Arabian Horse Life.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yeah. So she wrote, her first article came out in the latest issue that was about, in the Arabian industry, we have discovery farms, which are Arabian farms that look to outreach to the community and stuff like that. And she did a great piece on those. But what I'm really excited about is her piece that is scheduled to come out in the issue we're working on right now, which is what she was talking about earlier, the connection between horses and humans, because she did a piece for us about Arabians in some therapeutic type programs and their stories. And as a person, I have a huge background as a volunteer in therapeutic riding. And so that to me really touches my heart. But those stories, the stories that she got of these horses and their interactions with the people is just fantastic. I can't wait for it to come out. I'm very excited.
I'm excited too.
Yeah, it was a really, really good article. So, I will give a shout out and kudos to Hope. She found me at the AHP conference last year, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's how we hooked up, and she's now writing for the magazine.
Any conference, it's the networking in the hallways.
It,
Absolutely.
I mean, you learn stuff in the things, but it's a network in the hallways.
I love this so much. Last year was my first year, and I'm back.
Yeah.
And that says a lot.
Yeah. And, you know, I think we probably have listeners out there who are writers who might be interested in joining AHP, who maybe can come here next year.
Yes.
I think it's in Albuquerque next year.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. New Mexico? I've never been there.
Yeah.
So good.
So, you know, if
a little different scenery than here, though.
Well, let me tell you.
A little less green. Yeah.
Good Mexican food. I'm already excited.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, what's the blog? Where can they find it?
Redhorseonaredhill.com is the blog. And if I could put in a plug for my book, a few years ago, I had a book come out. It's called The Story of Kimbrook Arabians, and it's available on Amazon. And it's a story about an Arabian horse breeding operation that I became involved with when I won a horse as a teenager in a riding contest.
It just changed the
trajectory of everything. So anyway, I hope listeners
were mom and dad as happy as you were.
Well, I had to, I was raised on a dairy farm, and they were very committed to me going into the dairy industry, and that was not my bag. And I had already started raising chickens and selling eggs so I could afford my first pony, and then I wrote this essay and won this other horse, and I was off and running on my own. So, so they just kind of, by that time, they had learned to adapt.
No, they gave up.
Yes, to be honest. So there's nothing we can do.
All parents eventually just give up.
Yeah. I'm sure that's exactly what happened. And now they're just shaking their head.
Redhorseonaredhill.com.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for stopping by, Hope.
All right. While we get our next guest lined up, we have some AHP Student Award winners joining us. They're always here every year. And we have a couple of them that are going to be joining us. But first, we're going to hear some commercials, and we'll be right back.
Horse people know that they can count on Ovation's value, quality, and style when it comes to hard-wearing schooling attire, affordable show gear for horse and rider, or top-of-the-line equipment for riders at every level. From breeches to bridle work, saddles to stock ties, helmets to half chaps, Ovation is the premier brand of riding apparel and equipment for you and your horse in the United States, outfitting riders at every level from head to toe. Ask for Ovation brand riding helmets, breeches, and footwear at your local tack store, or go online to ovationriding.com and see the fantastic variety of quality, fashion-forward, affordable products from Ovation. ovationriding.com. Cashel Company is your proud source for English tack, equipment, and accessories, and they have been for a long time. From cushion pads to saddlebags to fit your English saddle, Cashel Company has what you need. Their full line of accessories, such as the rolling crew bag, hay bale bag, and fan bag, help make chores easier and keep you organized at the barn or on the road. Of course, you can still find the same fly protection you have trusted for decades in standard designs or limited edition colors and patterns. You can find the Feather Flex girth in jump or dressage style and a wide range of tush cushions to fit your English saddle as well. If you need it, chances are Cashel Company has it. Be sure to check them out online at CashelCompany.com.
Well, we thank Cashel for their support of our show, and we're going to be announcing some prizes next week for Really Bad Ads. No Really Bad Ads this week, as we are live at Hunt Valley, and we're doing a special American Horse Publications episode here. I have Lisa Wysocki, who, of course, co-hosts all the time, and we're finally at the point in your book on Wednesday where we find out who done it. They're stuck in a cave. They're all going to die. And that's the point we're at in the book.
That's the most exciting point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I actually went into a cave doing the research of that book. So
I used to be a spelunker. So
Did you?
Yeah.
So you know.
Yeah, no.
You know how dark it can get in there.
I can picture the whole thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, good. Good. Yeah.
Well, so it's been fun doing the book.
Well, I've just been so thrilled that you've been doing the book. So it's been a lot of fun.
All right. Our next guests.
We have some AHP Student Award winners. And so we've got Emily Holizak from Mount Holyoke College and Alyssa Murphy from Delaware Valley University. And so every year, AHP selects some outstanding students to bring to the conference, students that might want to make a career in equine journalism or equine media. And we've got two of those wonderful students here today. So welcome.
Thank you.
Welcome. Just kind of come close to the mic.
Getting close.
So Emily, let's just start with you. How has the conference been for you so far?
It's been really interesting. There's a lot of different events to go to, really diverse, and networking as much as I can. And yeah, everyone's really great.
That's great. So Alyssa, is this what you expected, or?
I've been so impressed with how welcoming everybody has been, inviting me to come sit with them at meals and networking events, just coming up and saying hi and shaking my hand and anytime they get the chance. And it's really great. And I've met some really cool people so far.
That's great. So what, after you get out of school, what would your dream job be?
Well, I just graduated last month.
Oh, congratulations.
Yay.
So, yeah.
Get that out of the way.
So are you here job hunting too?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good place to do that too.
Exactly. I currently do a little bit of everything. I've done some work.
I start with the fact that Alyssa looks 12?
Yeah.
You're going to get carded till you're like 90. Did you just graduate from college?
Really? I did.
Yeah.
All right. Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. So I dabble in a little bit of everything. I've done some press office work. I work as a horse show photographer currently.
Oh, cool.
I made a short documentary for my senior capstone project. And this is such an excellent
place.
It was about a BLM Mustang. And this is just such an excellent place to meet a really diverse group of people in the equine and media worlds.
Absolutely. So Emily, what about you? What have you graduated too?
I did. Yeah, I graduated about a month ago as well.
Yay!
Yeah.
Yay! So what area of this horse media would you like to get into?
So I am currently working freelance as an equine journalist, and I've been doing that for about a year and a half now. I've worked for publications like Equestrian Living, and most recently, I did some work with Practical Horsemen at IHSA Nationals.
Wow.
So, yeah.
That's impressive.
Yeah, get into Practical Horsemen. You're doing pretty well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, how did you learn about AHP?
I was just on a Google bender a couple years ago. You know how that is in the middle of college. You're wondering if you're doing the right thing. What your options are once you graduate.
Does a Google bender involve alcohol?
Sometimes. Depends on the
mood.
I know
what a bender does. Yeah. I didn't know if a Google bender
And so I was just searching careers in equine media, organizations in equine media, different publications, and AHP came up in one of my search results, and I found the Facebook page, and I liked it, and that's how I ended up ultimately hearing about the student award.
Okay, now what people really want to know about is, do you have ponies?
I do.
What do you have?
I have a 24-year-old Arabian and a 2-year-old Mini.
Oh, what a great combination.
Yeah, completely different ends of the spectrum.
Do you
do
anything with the Mini other than pet it and brush it?
Right now we're working on manners as a 2-year-old Mini.
2-year-old Mini, you'll be doing that till he's 22.
Yeah.
Then he'll grow up.
Yeah.
The goal is to have him in front of a cart.
I drove my first Mini when we were in Alaska a couple weeks ago. And because I'm a driver, so I've driven the draft horses and Minis or whatever. That was my first Mini to drive. I giggled the entire day.
I saw the photos.
Oh, it was so funny. It's just their little legs going, and we're trying to keep up the horse that's driving in front of us. It was so funny. I just laughed the whole time.
I can just see Scooter having a little buddy.
Yeah.
I drive as well, mostly ponies through classes I had taken at Del Val. But I haven't had the chance to drive a Mini yet. So my guy,
I have a Hackney pony.
I love Hackneys.
Yeah. They're a wild little group.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Emily,
driving a Ferrari.
It is. Do you have horses?
I have a horse back home right now. I just took him home from school a couple weeks ago. His name's Noah. He's a Frisian thoroughbred.
Ooh.
Oh, wow.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Is he black?
No, he's bay.
He's bay.
Okay. A lot of hair.
A lot of hair, yes.
Yeah.
He has a lot of dapples as well. He's handsome, and he knows it.
What were you, a jumper? What were you doing?
Yeah, I do jumpers with him. But at school, I rode equitation on my collegiate riding team. So I did that all 4 years back in school.
Wow.
Well, Mount Holyoke is known for its collegiate riding team. So you were on a pretty good team.
Yes.
To begin with. So, great. Well, thank you guys for joining us. We really appreciate you stopping by and congratulations and good luck getting the gig.
Thank you for having us.
We're so excited you're here.
All right. Yeah. Take care, guys.
Good luck in your careers.
And Alyssa, hold before Alyssa goes.
Sure.
You said you were on the podcast. What are you doing with podcasts?
I was a member of the Delaware Valley University Podcast Club.
First of all, the fact that there is one says a lot about podcasting today, because there certainly wasn't one of those 5 years ago.
It was a very new club at Del Val.
I bet.
And while the school isn't really known for its media and communications program, it's something that we're really trying to get off the ground. And the podcast club was our means of doing so.
Was it full of the nerdiest, geekiest kids in the school?
To some extent,
yeah. I know the feeling. Yeah. Did anybody actually do a podcast then? Did anybody get one off the ground?
We have a few shows that we've done. I haven't worked on any podcast shows myself. We have a pop culture show, a Del Val news show. But myself, I've done some video work with the club because it is our only media source for campus.
Well, I'm so excited that there was one. I was so excited to hear that because, you know, after doing this for 10 years, 10 years ago, nobody knew even how to listen. It was educating, you know. We were using iPods back then.
Right.
Downloading it to your computer. It was a pain. It was a real pain.
Yeah.
So I'm really happy to see that colleges are starting to look at that, too.
Yeah, it's really exciting.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I hope you get your own someday.
Thank you.
All right. Good. If it's a horsey one, let me know.
All right.
Yeah. All right.
Thanks, Alyssa. Thank
you. Thank you, Emily.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it. Is Sabine here? She was here.
She was here. I'm sure she'll be back.
Yeah, we lost her for a second.
I'm sure she'll be back.
Oh.
Yeah,
all right, good. So now the other thing that you guys did, you went to a couple places yesterday.
We went to four places. So we stopped at Jack Fisher's training stable, and he's like one of the leading steeplechase trainers in the country. And I was just so impressed because, and he also does some flat racing, but I was so impressed because these are horses who are out most of the time. And you know, the horses will be stalled, but they're on big pasture turnout. And it's really more of a holistic approach that he has to his training. And his horses go and go and go. And they, you know, they hardly ever get, you know, barn sour, or they don't develop these vices. And inside the barn, he has a very open concept inside the barn. So a lot of mesh stall front.
So they all see each other.
They all see each other. Just a light, airy barn and lots of gallops. And I think I can't remember how many acres he has, but it's hundreds.
Does he turn out?
Yeah, all the time. And they have a spring racing season and a fall racing season. So summer and winter, they're not there. And so they have one of the leading horses there called Mr. Hotshot that we got to meet. And he's just really cool, just a really personable horse. And he's one of the leading all-time winning steeplechase horses ever. And he's just amazing. He's 12 now. And he just really enjoyed, you know, meeting 50 people, you know, and having people just surround him. And he just was like a big puppy dog, you know. It was really great to see him. And they were real open about, you know, their feeding and their training methods. And, you know, any question we had, they...
What happens to retired steeplechase? Do they end up in the fox hunts?
Well, this horse, he's hoping goes to, like, a pony club person or...
Well, they're certainly trained, right?
And
can jump anything.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And I think some of them do end up as fox hunters, and some end up as 4-H or pony club horses or, you know, and you know, a steeplechase horse is fearless. So they're gonna jump anything, and they're gonna be used to being hauled and handled, and so they're good for kids, you know, most of them, you know. But he was really an amazing person to talk to, and just you know, see his facility.
And where else did you go?
Well, we went to the American Hunt Club itself. And, you know, got to see the old house and the 80 hounds, which I think was the highlight of everybody's day. Who doesn't like 80 wagging tails, you know? And Then we went to Saginaw, which is just that historic thoroughbred racing farm, and just to see that history. I mean, Native Dancer is a thoroughbred sire that is in just about every pedigree,
right,
you know, you
right.
look at, you know, every thoroughbred horse traces back to,
hey, Lisa?
To
Dave
Dancer at this point.
Glenn, I have a question
so,
for Lisa.
You know, this is where he was foaled and where he started. And so here's the story.
Okay, hold
him.
On one second. Hold on. Lisa, Jennifer has a question for you quick.
Yeah.
I'll have to translate because
okay.
she can't hear.
Yeah. Does she mean Sagamore Farm?
Do you mean Sagamore Farm?
Sagamore. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That,
okay.
I thought
I'm
so.
Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah. See, Saginaw, Michigan, there's a song that's going around in my head. You
I was
know?
Going, like, I thought I was going to say something, but then I thought I had it wrong. So.
No. So here's the story of Native Dancer, this really famous horse. So his mother was supposed to be bred to another horse. So she wouldn't get on the trailer. So they walked her across the street and bred her to the stallion across the street.
And that's where this accidental baby came from.
That's where Native Dancer came from.
And he won all of his races, famously, except for one.
Except for one.
The Kentucky Derby.
Yes, he won everything else.
That he lost everything. By about a nose or
yes,
something.
Yes, and they have a painting of him losing by a nose,
no.
and they hung it up in their bathroom.
Wow.
That's funny.
Yeah, yeah. So it was pretty amazing. So just, you know, I just love history. And this whole area is just so, so filled with horse history. You know, I mean, it just would be a great place just to come visit, you know, if you just love horses and have horse history, you know, I think it would be really cool.
Now, Jennifer, did you ever hunt down here?
I hunted with Greenspring, I think maybe once. And I've hunted in the area a while, but maybe only once or twice. It was by invitation when I was in Pony Club. You know, they'd have junior day and they'd trundle us all out there and let us play fox hunting. I did get to school on the hunt course one time.
You got to school on the hunt course? Well, that's pretty good.
Yeah, I didn't jump. I didn't jump the big jumps. I'm not that crazy, but it was pretty awe-inspiring. Just to gallop around out there. Just awe-inspiring. Yeah.
She said she didn't jump the big jumps.
Oh, well, yeah, they're pretty big.
Yeah.
You know, what I thought was really interesting is during the race, during the steeplechase, they have to cross a pretty major road. And they put down tarmac and they close this. It's a two-lane road, but it's a really busy road. I mean, we had to cross the road and we had to, like, wait, you know, 5 minutes before the cars would let up. So they closed this road and they put tarmac down so the horses can, like, gallop full speed across the road and not fall, you know, or not slip. And the lengths that they go to make this race happen is pretty amazing.
Yeah, we've seen a steeplechase once or twice, and they are just fun to watch.
Oh, I mean, tremendously fun. Tremendously fun. And you know, I think the strategy that's involved, so they were telling us that one trainer typically follows a horse, tries to find a horse that will crash through the fences, because in steeplechasing, it doesn't matter if you knock the fence down. It's just whoever gets to the end the quickest. So whoever gets to the end the quickest, it doesn't matter if you, like, don't even jump anything, if you just crash through anything. So this one trainer, I won't mention any names, tries to find a horse that will knock down the fences. And so he takes his horse over the fences that are knocked down, so his horse doesn't have to expend a whole bunch of energy. And then his horse has a lot of speed at the end, and then he catches up at the end. So, and he's
tricky.
Very successful doing
That's
that.
Tricky. You
know? So there's all kinds of this strategy going on in these steeplechase races that we as spectators maybe don't really know anything about.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I think our next guest will be here shortly. But in the meantime, what's going on in the Arabian racing world?
Well, I was going to say Arabian Racing Radio episode 11 just released today.
Yay!
So, and we talk about Delaware Park is basically, which is only about an hour from here.
That's not far.
Yeah. No, it's only about an hour down the road from Hunt Valley. Delaware Park is kind of our pinnacle meet. It's our premier meet for the Arabians, and it got started on May 30th and is doing quite well. We are starting this weekend out at the Fair Circuit in California, and that our guest for the episode that just came out is Chris Griffin, who is the track announcer for the Northern California's Fair Circuit. So
that's fun.
Yeah. And he talked about, because out there, there's thoroughbreds, quarter horses, Arabians, and mules. Which,
really?
Oh, yes. To this day,
mule racing? Paramutual mule racing?
Yes, paramutual mule racing.
Oh, now, I have never seen that.
It's still on my bucket list. I have got to go see mules. They run like quarter horses, about 220 yards. And they and he tells some funny stories, because he said, you know, mules have a mind of their own and they will do what they want to do. So that's, you know, so that's out. That's a great interview. We talk about Justify, of course, winning the Triple Crown. I mean, we're in Arabians, but we're horse racing people. And right. that is all the talk in the horse racing world right now.
Is there a Triple Crown for the Arabian racing world?
There has been. It doesn't actually really exist right now, but there was in the past. And we had one winner of the Arabian Triple Crown, a horse named T.H. Ritchie, who is standing at stud now over in the UAE. He was an incredible racehorse and has been an outstanding sire. He's now in the Racing Hall of the Arabians Racing Hall of Fame. But we, you know, our numbers have dwindled to the point where trying to maintain that wasn't quite working right now anyway, but maybe we're starting to bounce back this year. So, so we've almost been on for 6 months now, which is cool and exciting. It is hard to believe. And it's great fun. So, you know,
good. Yeah. Well, I'm glad you guys are enjoying it.
Yeah.
We do have a little bit of fun doing what we do.
Oh, we have a great time. My co-host Joe and Jemmy, our fabulous producer from Horse Radio Network, we have a fantastic time. We enjoy it, and I think that helps.
Don't tell her that too often.
Oh, okay. Will she get a big head?
Yeah,
all right. You know that Jemmy, I tell you, she is kind of high maintenance.
Yeah. All right, our next guest is here, and this is going to be a little bit of a switch up. You have to be able to intro the mic.
Okay.
Come right in. Karen Brittle's here, and she writes for Dressage Today. She's program director and instructor at Great and Small. You're a PATH certified instructor.
Yes, that's right.
So you get to do a lot of different things. But one of your jobs that we want to talk about is you translate books, specifically dressage books, from German to English.
Dressage and other equine related topics.
Okay, so that's interesting because it's very technical.
It is, yes.
Yeah. How did you learn German? Was it a living there thing? Or
I taught English in Germany when I graduated from college 20 years ago. And while living there, met my first husband and learned German in the personal context of our home. And I have a background with writing. And so the publishers at Horse and Rider, Books or Trafalgar Square Press asked me if I would be able to translate, German to English equestrian books. And I said, I'd give it a try.
So what's been the most difficult part of that?
There's a learning curve with each book. And so it's always a slow start. And I have the feeling at first that I'll never get to the end of the book as I start the translation.
I feel that way about most dressage books.
Well, and I actually, for me, what kind of keeps me going is that the books that that Trafalgar Square has selected are so interesting to me. And I feel
Ingrid Klimke's and.
Yes. Yeah. Her book, the Ingrid Klimke Guide to Training Horses, the German title is Reiter zur Deinefreude, but I actually forget how they ended up titling it in English for the final. I feel like equestrians like Ingrid Klimke, Christoph Hess, a German veterinarian named Dr. Grossmeyer, they have ideas to offer that are really appealing to an English-speaking audience or an English reading audience. And so in a way I'm inspired to persevere through the initial chapters because I know that the content is really valuable to equestrians worldwide.
Well, you write for Dressage Today, so you understand the basics of what they're talking about anyway, which helps.
I do. I understand the technical side of dressage really well on paper. It becomes a lot more difficult when you try to execute it.
Most riders.
Exactly. Yes. But the two, being a freelancer, writing frequently for Dressage Today and translating the German horse books, has those things work well together. They support one another because I continue to learn about dressage. And most German equestrian philosophy has a dressage base to it, even in other sports or whatever. And so there's a good overlap there.
Yeah. You know, I think a lot of the listeners know that I, too, am a path instructor. And Karen and I were talking last night that when I was the equine trainer at Saddle Up, which is a program in Franklin, we had a Bavarian warm blood donated who was from Germany. And he responded really well to German commands. And I don't speak German, so I wish I had known Karen at that point. But what are some words that we can say to our horses in German?
Oh, wow.
You know,
what? So I guess I always like to start with praise. If you wanted to praise a horse, you could say du bist lieb or sehr gut. And these would be words that let the horse know that they've done the right thing.
Sehr gut?
Yes.
Sehr gut. And what was the first one?
Du bist lieb. You are good. Yes. These would be phrases that would let the horse know they've done a good job. And yes, I'm not exactly sure, because I haven't trained in Germany, what those more like instantaneous commands would be. They don't come up in the books so often, but
there's more words that we use more often, like you know, things like that. I think they probably come up more often in our lives in the barn.
If you want me to give those a go.
Give those a go, because we don't understand what they say anyway.
Okay, so, Scheiße? I think that's what you were asking. If the horse were bucking, one might say that.
Jamie, my co-host normally, has a saying that we've said at the end of almost 2,000 episodes now. And that's spay, neuter, and geld. But one of the things that she always says, and they've made her hats, and a listener made her hat, this is geld that scheiße.
Okay.
So how do you say that?
Oh, wow. I'm not sure. I really don't know.
Geld that
scheiße. I do
we'll
not know
that.
On
that's
the spot. Right. Geld on the that spot. Scheiße. I'm so sorry.
Well, how about...
I have a good dictionary that I keep very close at hand
how
when
about
I translate.
I love horses in the morning.
Okay. Ich liebe Pferde im Vormittag.
Good.
Now, wait
Mark
a minute, Glenn.
Jennifer.
Wait, Glenn.
We got to take
You got to wait
out.
Right there. Okay. Now, you have to set this up. We have to set this up. You're listening to Horses in the Morning, so we can cut that out.
Okay. So we need another saying so Jennifer can cut it out and use it. You're listening to Horses in the Morning.
Sie hören Horses im Vormittag an. Oder herzlich willkommen beim Horses im Vormittag.
See, when people do that, we never know what they're saying. They could be saying, boy, this show sucks.
Oh, no,
we don't know.
Just welcome to Horses in the Morning.
Okay.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah. I had time to think about that one. So I have a good friend, also a PATH International instructor, Anya Kane, who's a native German speaker, and she helps me with the phrases that I struggle with. So I promise my books are accurate.
Is it easier to read than talk?
It's much, much easier for me to read, and I read quite fluently, and of course just get better with, you know, the more books you do. We have now a running vocabulary list and so on. But I never have the opportunity to speak German because it doesn't come up, you know, if you spoke Spanish or something more common in the communities in this country, it would come up more. In 10 years of working at a PATH center, I think I have had one family that my German actually helped a little bit, because most German people speak English so well. So
who proofreads your stuff?
With the more challenging books, I've actually formed sort of a cooperative approach with my friend Anya Kane, where she helps me by looking over the more technical passages. And then actually I submit the final manuscript to the editors at Trafalgar Square, and then one of their editors just reads the English and edits the English. And I mean, also as an equestrian, you can tell if the translation is logical. You know, if someone has the technical knowledge about the riding or the veterinary topic or what have you, they can tell if the translation is logical.
I've had some, not my Cat Enright series, but some of my other books have been translated into foreign language, like in Jakarta and Indonesia and Portuguese. And I'm like, and they send the books to me and I'm like, going, I don't know. I see my name on the cover.
That's the only word I recognize. It's my last name. Yeah.
Looks good.
Yeah, I'm signing off on this, you know?
Oh, geez.
So I don't know. Do the authors then go see the books? Do you know?
As far as I know, there's only been one author who has asked to review the English translation.
Right.
And that author also provided an email address in case I had questions as I was going. It was nice.
Yeah, because you're right, because what you said is true. Most of the Germans know English.
Yes, and could at least,
especially if they compete.
Yes, right. And and international clinicians and things like that, they speak English well and read English well. So yes, they may not want the task of translating their own book into English, but they certainly can read the English translation. Yeah.
Well, let's give a quick plug, and then we have one more guest before we wrap up the day. Yeah. Give a quick plug for Great and Small.
Oh, thanks so much. So Great and Small is a nonprofit organization located in Boyds, Maryland. That's about 20 miles northwest of Washington, D.C.
Not too far from here.
No, not far. And we serve 60 to 65 riders with physical, cognitive, and social emotional special needs each week, either on horseback or in equine assisted learning activities with horses.
Well, so, thank you for doing that and for doing what you do. What's the website for that?
www.greatandsmallride.org.
Thank you for joining us. It's been fun.
It has been fun. What an honor. Thanks
for
letting me
have me. Say goodbye in German.
Yep. Oh, auf Wiedersehen. Tschüss.
Auf Wiedersehen. See, that's one we all know. Yes. We all know that one.
I passed that one.
Thank you, Karen.
Thank you, Karen Brittle. Appreciate it.
Yeah. So we have one more guest.
One more.
This has gone really fast.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. So our next guest is, and I'm never going to get your last name right, but I think it's Sabine Schlese.
Schlese.
And I think we've said it wrong every time we've ever had one of them on the show.
Yeah. That's all right. So, you're not alone.
So Schlese Saddlery is based in Canada, correct?
Yes.
And, you know, just amazing saddles. We have one at Colby's Army. We've talked about that a little bit. And, you know, I love the fact that, you know, the saddles always put our riders in the correct position. And we have four very diverse horses there. The saddle fits every one of the horses and fits most of our riders. We're just so excited to have one. But, you know, being an expert in saddlery, you know, I go around and do a lot of these clinics and I see a lot of saddles that are in disrepair or that they don't fit the horse. What can you tell our listeners that just might help them know whether or not their saddle is in good condition or whether or not it fits the horse? And I know that we could do 18 days on this, but just real quick.
Well, just really quick, you can always access our educational YouTube videos. We have over 65 of them on YouTube now, and we've had over 1.5 million hits on them. And I think that a lot of people who come to us through these YouTube videos. We go through the basic 9 points of saddle fit where you can do sort of a do-it-yourself assessment. Mm-hmm. And then you can actually, you know, determine for yourself what's going on. Is the saddle too long for my horse? There's some really easy instructional videos on there, what to make, how to make sure that your horse is comfortable. And if you've got issues with your saddle, if you know that it's not fitting in certain areas, most of the problems we find come at the withers. The saddle is pinching at the withers.
Right.
Or the saddle is too long for the saddle support area. And these are very easy visual determinations. And then you need to talk with your local saddle fit expert and see what can be done. Now, unfortunately, if the saddle is too long for the horse, there's really not too much that can be done because
it's just too long.
It's just too long. So unfortunately, we get a lot of our saddles that are sold on eBay. And people buy them and they get them at a very good price. But then we have to tell them that, unfortunately, it's not the right saddle for your horse.
Right. It's like wearing the wrong pair of shoes.
Exactly.
Yeah. They're just not going to fit.
Yeah. But it's an easy diagnostic. So.
Yeah. And, you know, what about, you know, checking the saddle for condition or repair? Because I see, you know, saddles that maybe the stitching is coming loose or, you know, what are some other things that people can look for to say, oh, that saddle might not be safe to ride in?
Well, the safety issue is usually with the billets. We want to make sure the billets are in good repair, and that's an easy fix, getting new billets put on.
Yeah.
one of the things also in some of the older saddles that you may find online are that the gullet channel is very narrow. You want to make sure that you have at least 3 fingers breadth. That allows for the horse's spinal processes.
Gullet is the part underneath the saddle.
Underneath where the two panels, two panels meet, sort of that space in the middle that's lying
that
on.
That goes along the horse's spine.
Exactly. And stitching is a very easy thing to fix as well. So those are just minor repairs. More important is that you do the little bending thing to see if the tree squeaks, whether it's still whole, because that then is a bit more of a major repair. Not that it can't be done, but it indicates that there's something that needs to be done with the tree itself.
Yeah.
And that means taking apart the saddle and actually doing whatever has to be done.
I can't tell you how many people we know that bought used saddles, tree was broken. They didn't realize it.
Yeah. We had a saddle at another therapeutic riding center that I was at. It was a Steuben, which is also a nice saddle. Yeah. And it was a newer Steuben. And I got on that saddle and I had not checked it. I just got on it. And I'm like, I'm like riding sideways on this saddle. And I finally realized, oh, the tree's broken on this saddle. You know, which is why
One of the things that we also have found is that our saddles are made generally custom for a certain horse. And one of the things that we do to accommodate equine asymmetry is that we actually can adjust our gullet plate to accommodate the larger shoulder. Now, this is an interim orthotic type thing. Like, you know, if you have scoliosis or whatever, you wear orthotics in your shoes. Mm-hmm. And it's meant to help the rider straighten the horse, because that's, of course, what we all want is an even straight horse. But sometimes what happens is that these saddles get sold on eBay and then they get bought by someone who has a horse that it doesn't fit to, and they call their saddle fitter and they take it apart and they go, oh my God, Schleise makes crooked saddles. We don't. We make these saddles
for a horse.
On purpose for a particular horse. So just be aware of that. If you're buying a saddle that may not fit your horse, that because it has been adjusted to a different horse. So,
So what's been your favorite part of the AHP conference so far? I mean, we're just getting started. We got 2 more days to go. But.
Oh, I love this conference because it's great networking opportunities. Johan and I write for various equine magazines, so it's always nice to meet the publishers and the editors of the magazines that we are involved with. It's great to see old friends like yourself, Lisa.
Yes.
I'm actually one of your biggest fans with your book writing.
Oh, thank you.
So I'm always thrilled just to get in touch with people again that I haven't seen for a while. You know, it's once a year and you may be in touch intermittently through the year, but it's always nice to see the faces again.
Yeah, it is.
So
it
she's
is.
A Cat Enright fan,
she
huh?
She is, yes. She is. Well, I thank you so much for stopping by. This has been really, really great. Great tips. It's always great to see you. And I'm sure that we'll connect even more
Absolutely.
As the conference days go.
Thank you.
Go by.
Yeah, it's great to have this honor to be interviewed, and nice to see you too. Glad
give us,
to see
give you. Us your website.
It's just saddlesforwomen.com.
Sounds saddles great.
And that's because nobody could spell her last name.
Yeah. So that's well, it goes into the Schleise account, but
it's
easier to remember Saddles for Women. You know, everybody
that's
can remember
right.
that.
I agree. I think it's a brilliant move. Yeah. Saddlesforwomen.com.
Yep.
All right. Thank you, Smee.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us today. We really appreciate you being here at the AHP conference. Now, we have food to eat and people to meet.
We do.
So
we do.
We have a lot to do here yet. And I wanted to remind you, if you're just joining us, that the listeners have organized a meetup tonight at the Ruby Tuesday in Columbia, Maryland at 7 p.m. So if you want to come out and join us and you're a listener, you enjoy the show, Lisa, Stephanie, and I will all be heading down there, providing we can get through traffic to get there. But it's always fun when we get to meet the listeners around the world everywhere we go. So it's going to be a good time. So Ruby Tuesday in Columbia, Maryland on?
It is at 9071 Snowden River Parkway.
At 7 p.m. So we'll see some of you there. In the meantime, enjoy your weekend. Have a great time. Stephanie can be found at?
You can find me at ArabianFinishLine.com.
Or Arabian Racing Radio on the Horse Radio Network
our
app. And then Lisa can be found at?
LisaWysocki.com.
LisaWysocki.com. Any word on getting me in the movies yet? What's the story?
Well, we're working on it. You know, we've got Cat Enright's been optioned for film and television. We've been talking with the production company.
Ooh.
We're making pitches.
I think if you say I'll play myself, it'll be a done deal.
No, well, I think it might be like Brad Pitt or something.
Oh, but that would work. All right, I'll take that.
Yeah. So, fingers crossed. Everybody send good wishes that Cat gets to the big screen.
Yay!
Fun.
Yes. Continued good luck getting that done. I know it's a long process.
Yes, it is.
A lot
it
of talking
that
back
just
and
gave
forth.
Me goosebumps.
Yeah, I know. Isn't
so
that cool?
Exciting.
Wouldn't that be cool?
Gosh.
Do you get to go when they're filming and kibitz?
Probably. Yeah. Probably. Although I think, if I said too much, they might throw me off the set. So.
The damn writer's here again.
I know, exactly. Yeah, but I'll go watch.
So we'll be back Monday morning. Jamie will be here, and we'll have a normal week of shows for you next week. So we'll look forward to seeing you then. Thank you, Jennifer. Thank you, everybody. Have a great weekend.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.